Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is the one, KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota, 95.1. And, of course, for 50 years plus, we are 1080 on your AM dial in downtown Northfield, Minnesota, serving Castle Rock and Elko and also our friends in Denison and Nurstrand. And hello to those of you in Farmington and Rosemount and Faribault and Morristown. We are serving you on KYMN Radio with news, weather, sports, and entertainment. I see a woman in black. Black hat, no advertising. Black jacket, no advertising. Black blouse-like thing, no advertising. What's the deal going on there? Dina
Pessler. I'm going undercover today.
Are you really?
Undercover, yeah.
Okay. Who's?
That's part of the secret. No, I didn't have a lot of heads up on coming in today. So.
Well, you're not supposed to say that.
Oh, okay, but that's how we roll. And yep. You,
like, you know, get that little mic a little closer to
you
there.
Call and I answer. So,
all right. Well, I appreciate it, Dina. You're a very interesting person. Dina Pessler has been my guest on more than one occasion. And we had our 50th anniversary last Thursday.
I know, I missed it. I'm so sorry.
And anyhow, I have been going down to Mayo, and I'm waiting for some results and confirmations, et cetera. So I find it hard to, book a guest and then say, hey, I'm sorry, I'm gone. And next week, my wife gets a vacation, and I don't know where we're going, but we won't be in town. And getting people set up, people have said to me, and marveled, I might add. Do you like that word, marveled?
I love marveled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, at how many different guests that I have had on here for the last.
I have marveled.
And, sometimes there's a. You just don't get things done, and this is last week, this week have been that time. So anyhow, I said, well, it's been a long time since you've been on, and you probably are doing something really cool right now. And if you don't know, folks, Dina and I first met when we were promoting one of her programs, and it's a CCC.
It's sort of like, if I kept asking you about the radio station you worked at a really long time ago and asking you to give those call numbers when you're really a KYMN guy now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You wouldn't say KDWB.
No, but that was my goal.
You wanted to work for KDWB?
Oh, yeah. When I was going to a radio school, I wanted to say, hey, we're on KDWB 63. That's easy to remember. Now the Beatles.
Kids' station, and I listened to it when I was a teenager, and my kids have it set. But the 50th anniversary, I'd been aware that all these, great activities on the street and, dancing, Aztec dancing and all kinds of stuff, and we were out of town. So I felt bad that I missed.
Well, I missed you too.
Yeah.
But for those that may not be aware of whom you are, is that correct?
No.
Who you are?
This is who.
Anyhow, you were a woman that was trying to put together peace in the world through children, and you had a wonderful setup with your trips to Afghanistan, working with those young people there, very hard to get to them and get them educated. They, as I'll quote you, they think the world is flat.
And the ones that aren't educated sure do, yeah.
And hooking them up with people, students in the United States. You had several schools around the states in this program, and you went to that big city in Afghanistan, Kabul?
That's right.
Okay. And since we've been doing this show, you've been a guest of mine. That place has been bombed many times. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, wow, and you went over there and, you know, a tall American woman with blonde hair, you know.
Yeah, the great part about traveling with Afghanistan is I just look like one of the millions of women under a headscarf. So.
Oh, okay.
It's a very easy place to blend in.
And another reason I enjoy having you come in, and, you must have a new car. You got that one of the, what are those called, pods?
No, actually, it looks more high-tech than it is. All it does is it just, but, you know, the real car keys that, you know, are little computer chips.
Yeah, I was just noticing her car key on the console table here. Anyhow, some of the other things that I like to talk to you about are the television shows. And last time you weren't really into them. I don't know if you got back to them. If you did, fine. If you didn't, but you must have an opinion. But I have a real question that I want to ask, and you can respond to it, or you can say, I don't want to get into that, okay?
Politics?
Yeah. How did you know that?
Well, nobody would preface a question that way if it wasn't religion or politics.
I just want to know what a woman in your over, you know, if the youngest 25 to down to baby, right?
Mm-hmm.
Middle-aged is 26 to 50.
I'm old age.
And,
I'm officially
50,
old age. Yeah,
okay.
I know.
So,
kind of weird to get.
But I mean, you're an active woman, mm-hmm. and you get involved in a lot of things. You're raising three beautiful daughters that are from three different countries, mm-hmm. and they are now in junior high.
Are they still ninth graders? So
are you homeschooling them?
Well, it's online school, so they're at home
because
that's where they happen to be. But they're doing their classes with the rest of the kids that are in online school. They just see the teacher through their computer.
Is that because you don't want them to take the bus?
You know, I had an original list of why I wanted to explore this, and they did too. I mean, it was sort of a joint thing. It wasn't me saying, like, come on, kids, this is what's going to happen. But, and I think I had a sizable list at the time, and now my list is quadrupled. All the way, and we can talk about that too, because I have a lot of opinions about that, and that the state of where American teens are at in the school environment, I think it's really worrisome. And I know that this isn't just my opinion, because in the last year alone, there was like a tidal wave of kids coming into online school. And so much so that my kids had their classes changed a couple times and teachers rerouted because they had to, you know, accommodate all these kids coming in. Part of it is the school shooting culture. You know, kids are having so much anxiety. The parents, you know, it's not a normal thing.
Well, you know, so when you say that, I have to, you know, I know there are some students that are suggesting that they're scared to go to school because of the shootings and all that. And then I think, well, there are too many, but you know, your chances are one in 100,000.
Exactly. And, you know, you could also compare that to going to Afghanistan, just sort of like as an interesting comparison. I mean, it's not like every block in every street of every city and, you know, is having bombings going on all the time. But proportionately, I'd like to do the study on that. You know, what is the proportion of American school shootings ratio to? But the thing is, here's the thing, is that it's not so much that things are going always happening every day at every school in every city, but it might. And it's like this whack-a-mole. You never know where it's popping up. And it doesn't fit a profile. It doesn't fit an urban profile or a rural profile or a, you know, rich suburban school profile. It's all across the map. And the part isn't the actual shooting, it's the preparation for the shooting, and that these drills are a normal part of their daily life. And sometimes people of our old people generation, we talk about, oh, the air raids from the Russians, and we put our head under our desk. But the Russians never did anything. You know what I mean? It never actually happened. But whereas these drills, the kids are preparing for things that actually are happening. So it is something that's constantly reinforced into their psyche. And the reason, actually, the deeper reason underneath a lot of my list of why I wanted to have the kids, it's not just like bring them home and teach them. I just wanted to recreate a whole different environment for them. And it's not because I'm afraid they're going to get shot today, but it's this pervasive mental health issue that's plaguing their generation. And the mental health stems from all across the board, from having to have drills and active shooter drills and just knowing that this thing could happen to you. And what that does to the mind of a young person as they're forming their opinions about the world is a lot. And so the wave of kids coming into the online school environment, I think it has more to do with the fact that the kids just have so much anxiety and they're not performing. And when you know what I mean, when you're feeling like anxious and depressed or worried or traumatized and you're not working through it, because I think most people don't work through it. They may have some school counselors and they'll have some meetings, but that's just the tip of the iceberg on getting into the heart of what really is, goes on within the human emotional system.
What ages are your girls?
They are, Daisy's 15, Coco's 14. They're both in ninth grade, and Sunny's 12, and she's in seventh grade. And so and I can tell you, people always say, oh, your girls, they're so happy and healthy and kind. And, you know, they're just always kind of very vibrant girls. And I think part of it is because they have peace all the time. You know, they have no idea. I mean, they have no idea about, like, the shooting thing and then that whole culture, unless they hear about it on the news. But it never really affects them. We talk about it. But they've never felt unsafe. They don't have that factor in their daily diet, and they don't even know who's getting bullied. They don't know. I mean, you know, the aggression with kids is another thing, which an aggression, where does it stem from? Anxiety. You know, happy kids don't bully other kids. Kids that are very at peace with themselves and, you know, have this emotional well-being, it doesn't occur to them to do cyberbullying tactics and this scorched earth way that the world rolls now.
Do they have cell phones?
And they don't have cell phones. No, they don't. They don't need them. They have actually one. It's called the DCS hotline, we call it. DCS, DZ, Coco, Sunny. And that's the name of their little school program. They name themselves. And so And if one kid is going off, like, now they're getting older and they go off and they're joining Model UN or different, like, activities in the community. And if they're alone, they get the phone so that they can, you know, stay in touch with us and, you know, getting rides and picking up. And they have, you know, little chats with friends and stuff like that. But it's not allowed to have any games on it. It's, you know, they have the internet on it, so if they're needing to, like, source things.
I can't imagine two 15-year-olds and a 12-year-old with one cell phone. To me, that sounds like constant complaining.
Because their whole paradigm is so different. And now if you're a kid that's going to the regular public school, I think that it's like you have to have a cell phone the way you wouldn't send a soldier into the war without a weapon, you know. I mean, and not just to go and hurt people with it, but to defend yourself or all the things that you would need it for to get through the
day. Peer pressure.
Peer pressure is, and it's not just that. You could have the girls on the show sometimes, because when they go off to the 4-H, okay, so the summer they're in 4-H and they go off to their state fair, you know, trip, and I won't let them take the phone. You know, you're going to a kid event and it's chaperoned, you don't need this phone. But you know what? It is a quiet bus ride, because every other kid, they don't socialize. They're all staring at their phones. And I said, well, you'll have to work harder to be interesting, I guess, won't you? And figure out ways to break into their conversation. But they, you know, they'll tell you it can be very hard. So if you are a kid and you don't have a phone, you may be the loneliest person. And as a matter of fact, you could even ask. I ask the kids that I work with different questions from time to time. And I said, what do you kids do in between, you know, like at the end of the class, lessons done, you know, there's a couple minutes of horse around time while you wait for the clock to tick and then the bell rings and you go. And she's like, it's just dead silent. It's dead silent. There is no talking. There's no socializing. And, you know, this is in her school. And it was funny because we were having lunch while she was telling me this. We were up in Buffalo. And a teacher, apparently, from two tables away, he spun around listening to her talk. And he said, yes, it was never like this before. He said, usually the kids would interact with each other. And he said, now they just are zombies and they just stare and, well, they're socializing, but through their phone they could be socializing with the kids sitting on the other side of the room.
I've seen that done.
Yeah. And so
backseat at the car.
Yeah. And so, anyway, but there is an anxiety that comes with that, and they're losing their social skills and they're losing their feeling of safety because everything that they do is recorded and publicized, and they need it publicized, and they need it to not only be publicized every moment of their lives, but they need to get likes from it. And by likes, you know social media,
means,
okay?
Yeah.
You know, where I've even talked to kids about, I interview them a lot, and they like to tell me, every kid likes to tell their story, and they make pacts with their friend groups that anytime I post something, you guys all promise you're going to like it, right? And then we'll all like each other's stuff. So we'll never leave you hanging out there. Like, God forbid you would share a thought or a photo or a whatever, and it just sat there dead in the water without any affirmation. And I'm like, that is the kind of anxiety and stress and pressure that, and it's not normal, you know, because they're growing up with this really skewed identity, and then identity is another aspect of this. So anyway, my kids, they actually don't, now they'll grumble if you have them in here and you're like, kids, what do you think of everything? They grumble, but they'll say, like, you know, we kind of would like to go, like, it looks very kind of sparkly, like this high school thing, you know, and like you just kind of have this illusion that all the kids are just sort of walking the halls with their buddies and they're just laughing and joking and feeling, you know, cool and, you know, with all their in groups of people and getting ready for dances and stuff. And they do know that there's this sort of illustrious vision of it all. But then they also talk to kids. They know kids that are going there and they pal around on outside of school stuff. And they don't really get that impression from them. They get just a lot of stress. And so they're kind of realizing that, well, it's a little bit of that grass is greener thing. And their friends say, well, hey, you got to do school from San Francisco last week, Coco, so shut up. You know, like, I mean, when we're traveling, the girls, you know, wherever their laptop is where the school is. And that doesn't exactly stink, you know. But so they have this sort of feeling of, like, I want to do what everybody else does. But then they do know. They also are getting very keen at recognizing the anxiety in other kids too. And they can see that, and they are kind of glad that they're in this little utopian safe environment where they're not getting harassed. So
at 9:20 on 1080 Radio, Dina Fessler is my guest this morning on Kim, a friend you can count on. And as you know, last Thursday, KYMN Radio became 50 years of service to Northfield and the surrounding area. And so does the Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield. Dale Finger has been there for many, many years. He's the owner-operator. He worked there as a kid in high school, and now he hires a lot of high school kids. And that helps provide a good economy for Northfield because it's all locally owned and locally operated. As a matter of fact, their morning crew, Steve Eastrom and his wife have been there for over 40 years. People walk in and they start cooking their breakfast before they even order it because they know the people that come in. And they want to get to know you. So stop in to the QB, the Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield, serving Northfield again for well over 50 years. Dina Fessler is my guest this morning, and I invited her to come in because we always have something to say. And the question I was going to ask you...
Oh, yeah, the politics. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
About the hearing.
Did you watch... Yes.
Did reading your mind.
Did you watch the Kavanaugh hearing?
I did. And, I listened to it mostly. I'm, you know, my days, I'm all over the place. So I'll listen from the car on the radio. And then sometimes I'll be, like, working and on, maybe I'm drafting documents, but I've got my phone and I can see, like, some live stream. And so I'm not, like, completely glued to it, but it's in the background. And when I'm driving around with the girls, I wanted them to hear it just because they're studying American government, and what a cool way, I'm being completely serious, to study this is how the government works. You know, you can learn all your Senate and your different chambers and upper houses and lower houses and yada, yada, yada. And it just sounds like a bunch of words salad. You know, they're like, they're just trying to remember it for a test. But when you're actually like hearing about in an action on it, especially on something that's kind of got a lot of just, I would say there's nothing that's not interesting about this topic. And it's not the kind of stuff that most kids would expect. I said, but this is going to be very historic, and I guarantee you, you will be it, not just the where were you when this whole story went down, but it'll be something that you're studying in government as you, because government, are all governments, especially ours, is always a work in progress, and it's always something that's kind of evolving, and these are these moments that kind of like stop us in realizing like what is the law and what should it be in this constitution and this framework that was designed in this flexible way, and now they get it and it's okay, there's that. And then they also two out of the three of them want to study mental health, like going into psychology is something that's very interesting for them. And I said, I guarantee your mental health classes all through college will refer back to these moments like this. So they found it kind of interesting to be listening for a while. Do you want to know what I think is the most interesting?
There are a lot of people listening right now that have an opinion. And if you want to give your opinion, that's okay with me. I have to kind of back off because I don't want to offend anybody because I'll be here tomorrow.
I'm not even going to give it an opinion. I wouldn't because...
Why not?
Well, it's not so much an opinion, more as like a perspective.
I could be a devil's advocate.
Well, like I think it's very interesting. It's a very interesting thing when... You know, she spoke, the Dr. Ford spoke first, and it's hard for anybody to listen to her and not believe that this woman believes every word she's saying. I mean, I don't know if anybody had that feeling of like, that looks like a liar. You know what I mean? Because it was so emotional. It was just, unless she's just a really great actress and then she should be in acting instead of teaching, but, and then all of a sudden, in the afternoon, you hear the judge's perspective. And again, it's hard to believe, like, wow, that was really emotional. I mean, it was so much emotion that I think that people weren't really ready for that in a way. Because, you know, I think that the takeaway that I had is there will never be any winners here. I mean, these people are so wounded by this whole thing. Her wounds seem like longer term and his are, you know, ripping open right now. I mean, if his marriage stays together through all of this, this is, you know what I mean? It just looked like two really, really just blown apart lives.
I mean, you talk about breaking up a marriage because if he allegedly did what she says he did, how many marriages would dispense if one of the spouses learned that they had done what... I can't go there. Anyhow, because she's calling it rape, okay? And they
were... Well, she was assaulted.
Yeah, assaulted. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to do that. You shouldn't do that. And how many people have done that when they were drinking as a young kid in high school?
That's the thing that... You know what? Because I listened to the earlier Kavanaugh hearing. I like to listen and, you know, just kind of stay in tune. And again, I made my kids listen, like, this is what a Supreme Court judge hearing sounds like. And they question, and the team that he's on will throw softballs, and the opposite team will throw like hardballs. And that's how it goes. And this is kind of interesting. But then all of a sudden, you know, it just seemed like everybody's like, okay, this is a done deal. And he's going to be the on the Supreme Court. And then all of a sudden this 11th hour letter bubbles up and I'm just like, okay, it's another Stormy Daniels or something. You know what I mean? I was not really, not that I think that she's lying. I'm just saying it's like, this is going to be some theatrics, but it's probably nothing. And somebody's trying to get a book deal out of it or something like that. That's what I thought.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't until we were actually out in California, and I was looking at my news feed, and I read that article that was printed in the Washington Post, and it was the whole thing was there. And there was only one thought that went through my mind, because it was really wild, because I am exactly Brett Kavanaugh's age. I was in his grade in the class of 82, and I went to an elite school, not in D.C. area, but in Edina. And every single thing that she described in her letter and everything that's written in his yearbook, I know what all that stuff is. That is exactly how the culture was. And here's this isn't my opinion on, you know, who's saying truth or whatever. But I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, what that culture was like, I forgot. And I know plenty of girls back then who have her story. I know plenty of guys that did stuff like that. And I also know we all just kind of shrugged and we're like, you know, well, try not to get so drunk then. Yeah, I mean, like, nobody really had this... There wasn't this Me Too sensation, and it shocks me and it upsets me, because I'm like, how could we all think that was okay? And I'm not saying that I think he's guilty, but I'm just saying there is nothing about that picture, that scene, that I haven't seen. And I was laughing. This is me. Okay, this is kind of like, no, somebody, I don't want anybody to yell at you through because of me, but I know what all that yearbook stuff is. The yearbooks of 1982 was like the Facebook page before Facebook came, where you put out all your silly, embarrassing stories and the stuff that kids put on Facebook now, and they're like, oh boy, I forgot the whole world can look in on this. But, you know, we're irresponsible, and we did think that was funny, and it was funny to get drunk. It was super fun. And back then, I mean, parents would just go out for dinner for an evening, and the whole school would be in the house with the kegs and the wild swinging from the chandeliers, and somehow, and the police, everybody drove drunk. Everybody had a funny driving drunk story, and they knew all the police officers who would let you go, and you get back then, you get pulled over by the police, and they'd be like, hey, buddy, you know, straighten up and just drive a little straighter, and you couldn't even believe that would happen. You'd be in prison for life if you ever even thought about doing stuff like that. So, you know, the people that, so I'm always wondering with these other senators that are listening to these testimonies, it's like my first thought is like, well, how old are you? Because if you're Orrin Hatch, he's probably got, you know, like, this doesn't mean anything to him. But if it's somebody that's around our age, they know what this is. They know. Doesn't mean that he, and here's what I think. I would think that if Brett Kavanaugh, if he says that I don't remember, I kind of believe him, because you know what? Stuff like that went on all the time. And I couldn't say that I remember every person that I saw doing stuff either. And I would hope the FBI doesn't want to question me, because I'm like, I don't know, can't remember. So,
well,
there you go.
I'm a generation ahead of you, or even maybe one and a half generations, 1960. And we, as high school kids, we had... what we called keggers and mm-hmm. powwows and things like that, and things like you just described has happened. I've witnessed it, and I can honestly say I never did that because I was raised by my mother and my sister, who's a year older, and I would hear the stories that my sister was going through, mm-hmm. and I was taught to respect, and I did. Also, I was accused and sued for sexual assault by a former employee and had to go to court. And it was a lie. It was a downright mm-hmm. lie. Mm-hmm. I was found, and I got mad. Mm-hmm. I mean, I sat on the witness stand, mm-hmm. and her attorney said all these things, and I'm like, hey, man, that's not true. Mm-hmm. You know, I hated it. It just, you're attacking mm-hmm. me for something I didn't do for. Bottom line, money. Follow
mm-hmm.
the money.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I was cleared of all of those accusations, not guilty. I countersued her, won all three of those. It's in the law students' study that story because it's so unusual that employee sues an employer and an employer sues the employee
back, yeah.
and wins. The employer wins. So they have to study that. I mean, the fellows out in Columbia called home and said, Dad, guess what? Wayne Eddy and KYMN are in our studies. So when I watched the Kavanaugh hearings, she was very convincing. But when you say, well, when? I don't know. Where? I don't know. How many? I think four. Who are they? I don't know. And you go, okay, well, then when Kavanaugh gets in and he's ticked off, I understood that. I understood that. And then when the one, I can't remember his name or the state he is, but a senator, the ugly one with the, well, I shouldn't say that, but he's sitting there looking at Kavanaugh and saying, you are a liar. And this guy won the Senate seat campaigning on the fact that he fought in Vietnam, and he never had been to Vietnam. You know who I mean?
And he's still a senator?
Yeah, and he's calling Kavanaugh a liar when he lied during his political campaign.
Who
said he, you'd have to...
We'll have to Google this.
You can Google it when I take a break.
I think
he might be from Ohio. I'm not sure. But anyhow, the bottom line is when I was watching it...
You're probably feeling it from a personal standpoint, of being accused.
Yeah, she was very sincere. And so therefore, I believe she believes that happened. And then with Kavanaugh, I understand his anger. Some people said, who should be a justice, Supreme Court judge that gets angry? And, well, have somebody...
When you're the one on the life is in the balance, I do. I saw a man who is about to lose everything. And that's what sort of also this paradox with these two stories is he has had, you know, this very illustrious career. You know, he's, you know, he fast-tracked straight out of Georgetown prep, straight through Yale, up and up and up and up and up. And I'm like, wow, I wish my career worked on that same trajectory, and here he is, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, and we're only 53, and, you know, one of us could be a Supreme Court judge. I'm like, wow. And so, and he's got, you know, this sterling record of being this great guy, and then all of a sudden, the thought that it's not just you might not get that job, but you're a meme on Saturday Night Live now being played by Matt Damon. I mean, you're going to be the laughing stock. Like, I can see, like, this is a very your daughters, these young girls, are seeing, you know, their dad just, whether he did it or not, it doesn't matter, because this is what now everybody's thinking about, talking about, laughing about, yelling about, everything. And he can't get out of that fishbowl. And it's a very interesting, you know, paradox. And he's got, I don't know if he's got everything to lose. Okay, if he doesn't get the Supreme Court justice job, he's still got a good career going. He keeps his job in the federal courts. Unless he gets in trouble, and now if he's perjuring himself, then he could be going to jail. So that's just this really interesting, like, the high stakes. And so the anxiety that he must be feeling in every category, I feel deeply empathetic.
You know, when you think about it, you know, it's politics and follow the money, as you mentioned, and maybe a book deal. And yet, it just, you watch that and you say, your kids and everybody else's young people see how dirty politics are. I mean, when they come in with that letter, like you said, the 11th hour that they sat on, I mean, to me, it's like really obvious that they're trying to detain the confirmation because they want to get the November elections over. So if they become the leaders with the votes, they can appoint another one that would be with the Roe Wade. By the way, that was 50 years ago, the same day KYMN Radio went on the air.
There's a fun
Roe versus Wade.
To share.
I mean, to me, it's just very obvious.
Of course
it's just
it is.
Like,
of course it
I mean,
is. But you know, it's of course it is. But, like, I mean, I don't know why they would be apologetic about it, because it's like, I don't know, pick any competitive sports. It's like, would you not respect the wide receivers or the whatever that could figure out how to fake out the... I mean, that's the point, is to win for their team. And so, I mean, I think it's kind of funny when Republicans get sort of bent out of shape about this. It's like they would do it too. With Merrick Garland is like the perfect story. And once the gloves come off, I mean, it's like expecting that you do something to them and you're shocked that they take revenge on you. I mean, it's going to go back and forth till the end of time.
I'm going to ask you another question about one of the individuals, and we'll have a little over a minute now. Can you Google I'll wait for you to get your phone. Okay, lick your fingers.
I got my frosting on my fingers.
We have some quality bakery cinnamon rolls in the studio right now.
This is where the party is.
Okay, we are going to take a break on KYMN Radio, a friend you definitely can count on, and we'll be right back.
Farmers, all of us at Dakota Electric Association wish you an abundant harvest this fall. During this busy time of year, please be careful around overhead power lines. Watch equipment near poles and lines. And please, stay safe this harvest season.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
A home is probably the biggest purchase you'll ever make, and you want to make sure everything goes smoothly. Call me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell. I not only offer homeowners insurance to protect your investment, but I can help with home loans too. No wonder more homeowners trust State Farm than any other insurance company. For information, call me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell, at 645-4545. Providing insurance and financial services, loans are offered through State Farm Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, 50 years young. We are talking with Dina Fessler. Dina Fessler is a friend of the Wayne Eddy Affair, and we're talking about the Kavanaugh hearings, and I don't know if you're leaning one way or the other, or whether you think I'm leaning one way or the other, or whether you think my guest is leaning one way or the other. And the reason I ask that question is because the women's vote has been a major part of the elections the last 10 years, and I just thought I'd get your opinion on that because it's such a an obvious attempt by both parties to win the situation, and we don't have a word in that except through our senators. Now let's talk about Amy Klobuchar for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now Amy Klobuchar has become a very good senator in the eyes of most Minnesotans, and she sat on that panel. Now, she put herself in a, she didn't put herself in there, but she is in a situation where she wants to be sure that everything is covered, et cetera, and her demeanor during her conversation with Kavanaugh, I thought was very mature. And she was not mean-spirited.
Well, and the way she prefaced her questions by laying out her own family's kind of personal history, I thought that was a very interesting approach because, and I don't know if it was the lawyer in her, inching back a couple, when you're shocked that people, a whole room full of senators, which have probably all started in law at some point, okay, you don't hire the prosecutor that doesn't know how to pull out the 11th hour surprise. I mean, that's how, and like that's how the whole game works. We can't be shocked when they're doing the stuff that they're basically trained how to do, win cases. Okay, so that being said, Amy's a lawyer. She's, and now did she put her personal information talking about her father's alcoholism and putting it out there as a strategic move to sort of get him to talk a little bit more?
Well,
or was
it
a womanly kind woman thing that she did to
I think it was,
sincere.
I understand the situation because my father was an alcoholic. And so, therefore, if you want to, loosen up a little bit, you'll have this understanding.
Right, a common empathy,
And by the way,
I took it that way.
I have went out I had gone out on more than one occasion with Klobuchar, the sports writer for the Minneapolis Tribune, after Viking games, during Viking games, and we had a hell of a lot of fun. So it's painful for me to look at a senator that could be my kid, age-wise. Oh. Oh, my God. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, to me, I was listening to it. I didn't see her face. But, I mean, it did strike me as a very, not just kind, but it was a very empathetic way to let him know, like, we're in some really awkward territory here. And this whole drinking thing, and, I mean, which shocked me, when he disrespected her so much. I mean, that was like, he's almost reverting to his 18-year-old self, like with his parents questioning him, because that's like what a kid would do, and like keep throwing, like, I don't know, yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, please stop doing that, because this isn't helping you. You know, I mean, if I'm cheering for him, I'm like, dude, you got to stop that, and you got to stop this like little sass thing. I know your emotions are high, but... And so, sure enough, of course, like, he's getting.
But by the way, I did see Amy Klobuchar's face, and it was the way I read it was like, I really don't want to be here. I wish this wasn't happening.
Yeah, this is a very unfortunate thing for everybody. Anybody who's salivating over this experience has like some screws loose, I think, or they're very malicious people, because again, there aren't winners in here. And I also think that it's, I think that. This is kind of especially coming back to my perspective of somebody who's a peer from that era, that this whole party thing, this is the cornerstone of it. And like it or not, this guy, when he was a kid, made a lot of decisions that none of us and everybody drank to excess, and we thought it was funny to black out, and it was funny to do all this stuff, and the piecing back what happened the night before. Everybody has that story. So it's not possible for him to like claim like, oh, I have no knowledge of this. And he was a deke. He was in the fraternity. Like, I know those fraternities. I went to those parties. Like, you can't be the anomaly in this whole thing. And so anyway, but putting this context together is really, sadly, it's very relevant, because it's relevant on whether or not he's telling the truth or not, or whether he's trying to save his skin. And there's no good way out. There's just no good way out, which is the lesson that I give to my kids. I'm like, you know what? You know, luckily you don't have social media accounts, so you can't make fools out of yourselves, like doing public stuff, posting stuff that the world can screen save and save it forever and archive, and Facebook owns it and they're selling it to the Chinese right now or whatever, you know. Well, but I tell them, you have to be thinking the stuff you don't know. You might be a Supreme Court justice one day, and people are going to look at this.
He didn't rape. She's not being accused of rape. There's a sexual assault, right?
Well, I mean,
I don't want to get detailed about it.
I know, but it's like, I think it kind of falls a little bit under the same category where you just weren't successful. But it's the same.
What if he would have said, you know what, I drank a lot of beer, and he did admit that he likes beer. Mm-hmm. What if he would have said, you know, it is possible that what she is saying is true, and I apologize, I don't recall it. I may have blacked out because we used to drink like crazy, and I apologize for my behavior. That is not me. And then what would have happened?
Do you want to know what? I think it's cool that you said that, because I think for his own sake, just to be really honest, for his own sake, that is what he should do, and just be honest. And knowing that you are probably going to get chucked off the nomination, you know, they're going to. Because nobody's going to be able to vote in clear conscience that this guy who is, we're all human, I get that, but you're just not Supreme Court material. That's all I'm saying.
Well, what if the opposite happened, that the constituents of the senators on that particular committee were saying
respect
to the fact,
respect is honesty.
Hey, wait a minute, man. That happened back when he was 17 years old, and this is where he is now.
Maybe.
And
it's a crapshoot. You know what I mean? He could get off on the, you know what, you're coming clean, you're being honest, you're not trying to weave your way through this, and you're kind of coming clean, I think, for his own conscience, personally, like, and his own marriage and his own wellness. And truly, I mean, like, people still have to live after this is over. They have to sleep at night. They have to, you know, carry on. And the karma fairy can really come after you sometimes when you're, you know, living a life where you're, you know, constantly misleading, things like that. But I don't think in our political world that's respected. I don't. And I think we have passed the Rubicon, so to speak, of, you know, scorched earth tactics. You want this job, you want, you know, the respect of the other people that roll like that, you got to be a fighter. And that's sad. It's very sad. It's just a sad state, because at the end of the day, it is just a job. And, you know, his family legacy, I would think, is more important. But, you know, that's just me.
Did you find out who the senator was that campaigned on fighting in Vietnam?
Blumenthal.
From what state?
Well, I did, you know, all I did is get the name. I didn't do the full investigation. And I don't know to what extent that he lied. Like, when he said he was in Vietnam, did he just say he was there on vacation? I don't know.
He led the voters to believe that he was combat or served in Vietnam during the war.
But did he serve in any context? Was he in the military but just not stationed in Vietnam? Or
that's what I think.
During that era, yeah.
Yeah, but not like my buddies.
The people that were actually in the trenches, you know,
the honor and the pat on the back.
Right.
And, oh, my God, he fought in Vietnam. And he'd never been there. So, to me, to have him look at Kavanaugh and say, you're a liar, I just...
Well, I think that the message for all people, and especially kids, because that's who I talk to, that's my audience, is, you know, the things that we do to mislead, and this is the age, the formative years are when kids start forming their character. And, you know, do you let people think things that aren't true because you get a few extra points right now, but never expecting that you're going to be in a position? Like, that's the thing about the Supreme Court thing. This is why this is really unique. I mean, it's even more important than the president of the United States, because these are the people not that just make decisions. These are the judges. These are the ones that get to sit pious above all of us and determine our fate. And that is not even what the president is supposed to be. He's the executive. He's just supposed to get the job done. And these are the people that we trust with the institutions. And if that is tainted, boy, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of even scary to think how that could erode democracy. I don't think anything could erode democracy faster than not trusting the judges, and because
you're
holding the cards with our fate.
Exactly right, they've had the battles before in regards to seating a Supreme Court justice. It's almost like every one, because the opponent doesn't want it.
Right, and they're gonna drag out every last character flaw that they can come up with. But back to Dr. Ford or Christine. I still don't see what her game is, other than I'll tell you, here's something, I won't give any names, but ever since last Thursday, several of my former classmates have gone public with their rapes during college. And it was interesting, because I did not know that. They weren't at my high school wild parties, but, nothing about it surprised me. These women have been kind of unglued their whole life, you know, like just successful career people, but just like just an emotional mess, you know, a disaster with their marriages, their, you know, alcoholism, just all this dependency. I mean, I'm like, oh, wow, that is very interesting. And so back to the Christine Ford, I can completely see. I mean, she's got everything to lose here, but nothing to gain. If she is believed, and, you know, whatever, he's not confirmed or whatever, nothing really changes for her. Okay, maybe she has got a secret book deal. I don't know. But it doesn't really appear that way. She just looks like a mess. You know, she looks like a mess. She looks like my friends that are a mess that has happened to too. And they just are trying to figure out how to get through life with this shame and this trauma. And so I do understand. Now, that's a different story, though. There's two stories here, two tracks, and people kind of bounce back and forth. It's like, yeah, but the Democrats sat on the letter. Well, that's the other story. That's a political battle. But her personal reality and Brett Kavanaugh's personal, that is a different story. But it's very easy to distract by saying this is just a political maneuver by the Democrats. Of course it was. Of course. But that doesn't make her less traumatized. That is what it is.
If she supposedly sent that letter 30 days before or whatever it was, and it was supposed to be confidential, mm-hmm. and she did not want to testify, but now they bring it up at the last minute, and now she's there ready to testify and prepared. Do you think that the Republicans made a mistake having that prosecuting attorney, the woman from Arizona, sit in the corner and ask questions?
I think it was funny because even before Saturday Night Live did the spoof about it, that's exactly what it looked like, where they bring in this woman that they're, you know, and they're not trying to fool us. They're saying, it's pretty obvious, we're a whole bunch of white guys, and this is awkward for us to be questioning her, so we're going to hire this female prosecutor to speak for us. And and then by the time the lunch break, they're like, get out of here, like, we don't need
she
you
got fired.
She just got sent packing, and it was kind of funny.
Yeah, I will be back in a moment with my guest Dina Fessler right after this important, and I mean it, time out.
Hello, this is Josh Gare. My wife and I received bad news in 2006 when I was diagnosed with cancer. In addition to my growing health concerns, medical bills were piling up. I beat cancer, but I learned the struggles families face with the skyrocketing cost of healthcare. I'm running to be your state representative to be a voice at the Capitol who will fight for affordable healthcare. I will work across the aisle to lower costs and ensure you are able to keep your doctor. November 6th, vote for me, Josh Gare, to be your next state representative.
Paid for by Friends of Josh Gare.
Hi, I'm Angie Taylor, Director of Life Enrichment at Three Links Care Center in Northfield. We offer daily activities at each of our facilities, including independent senior living, assisted living, care center, and memory care. The activities range from exercise classes to sing-alongs, games to gardening, from bus rides in the countryside to painting fine art. Activities are personalized for the individual. Please call Three Links at 664-8800 or find out more at threelinks.org.
And by the way, Three Links Care Center has their annual golf tournament. And at that tournament, I had the pleasure of exchanging conversation with Randy Brewer. And do you know who Randy Brewer is? Okay, go ahead,
no,
finish your cinnamon roll. Anyhow, Randy Brewer is going to be my guest tomorrow morning. And I just want to let the folks at Three Links know that he'll be my guest because they invited him to be a personality celebrity on their annual golf outing. Randy was a superb player.
Oh, he's a golfer.
No, basketball.
Oh, a basketball player.
And I'm sitting here wondering if that seat you're seated in would be okay for him to sit on.
Well, if I don't spill my more of my cinnamon roll crumbs and make the seat all sticky, he'll appreciate that.
Yeah, how many times were you told not to talk with your mouth full?
These are the best cinnamon rolls, though.
One of the things that popped in my mind when we were conversing earlier, and you mentioned that the girls were off on a 4-H project and they went to the state fair, and I know you live on a 5 acres?
Seven
yeah. acre farm.
Yeah, hobby farm.
I think horses.
Mm-hmm, horses and chickens.
Okay, so what did the girls do for 4-H?
Well, I couldn't be more proud. The only thing they're interested in 4-H is the fashion, and they design and sew clothes and model them, which kind of catches people by surprise. They're like, you don't want to show a cow or anything, and all the different crafts. But I was a fashion designer in my earlier career, And to have like one little chip off the old block would have been a treat. But all three of them, they love it. And so we spend our summer designing and sewing their outfits. And this year was great because they're part of the Dakota County 4-H. And even though we live in Goodhue, and here we are in Rice in the middle. But anyway, they're part of the Dakota County, and they all got on the Court of Honor because they have a fashion show and they have to parade around. It's like Project Runway. And they all got picked to go to the state fair. Last year it was just Daisy, so that was kind of tough for the other two to watch her go alone. But they all got to go together. And then they have a big fashion show in the 4-H building, and the girls just eat it up, and I do too.
And so is it well attended at the state level?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, like, there's always 1,000 people milling around every inch of the fair. And so they have this big fashion review. So obviously there's probably like 50 different kids, or they're always girls, or maybe one token boy sometimes. But and they're modeling their clothes that they made.
How many different outfits are
just one? You know, okay. It's just one, and you have to get judged for the construction and the style and your modeling and your shoes that you coordinated, the whole package. And so all the parents and families of all these girls are there, and so it's very exciting. And actually, they have a choreographer. His name is Richard Moody, and he's a professional choreographer that I've known from back when I was designing, and he's still out there doing it. And he comes, and he's very flamboyant. He looks like he's straight out of a New York, you know, like a Broadway guy, you know. He's really kind of theatrical, and he's got the bald head and the earrings and the muscles and the cool clothes, and he's very flamboyant. And so it's just so cute because all these, you know, the state fair brings in kids from every little county corner in the country, you know, and they're coming to the big city, and then they've got this very, you know, kind of out there choreographer teaching them to walk and, you know, act like a supermodel. And the girls just get, they all just get so excited about this. So I do too. But it may not have been what the original 4-H people were envisioning. I think they kind of like, you know, bake
like,
a pie.
Like what? Bake a cherry pie.
Show a pig, Billy Boy. Bring your bunny.
Now, when you watch models on television from New York or wherever, and they slink down the runway, they're all really skinny, and they take these big crossover steps. And
how nice. Yeah.
Now, did your girls, you know, being 15 and 12, did your girls do the shoulder movement and
yes,
walk like a model?
I wouldn't let them even go for it if I didn't have them properly trained in. And you know who is really they're all good, but little Sunny has the talent. She's got the goods, and she just sails across that stage, and she gives a little wink to the audience. And I don't know where this kid gets it from, but she's really a. She's something special. She's born for the stage.
And what about what were the outfits like? We can save that for the next time. I'm going to take a little bit of a break here.
I'll show you
and
a picture.
Come back and participate in our conversation here on the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. We are KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota. That's 1080 on your dial. And then we are 95.1, the one FM. So we are happy to say that we enjoy you listening to KYMN Radio. And I'm going to play a selection here for just a moment and be back right after this. Don't go away. We have other things we want to discuss.
I got 7 knots to ride. Seven nights to rock. I got 7 nights to roll. 7 nights, I'm gonna have a whirl at a different got 7 nights to ride. I got 7 nights to roll. 7 nights I'm gonna show my face with a different chick and in a different place. 7 nights to ride.
Live and in color on the Wayne Hetty Affair on your radio station, KYMN. My guest this morning is a woman by the name of Dina Fessler, and she is from Cannon Falls? No. Denison? No. Kind of in between Kenyon? No. I don't know. You could go to, what school district is your farm?
They're technically in the Cannon Falls school district, but, to be most precise, we're Warsaw Township, and so I couldn't vote in a Denison election for mayor, for example.
Okay.
We're all in that township.
Question. Thursday, the week before 50th anniversary, we had tornadoes go through and did a lot of destruction.
Gosh, yeah.
And I'm wondering what it was like over on your side of town. Now, you live... when you get to, if you take County Road 9 and you go through Denison and you get to Highway 56, mm-hmm. if you cross the highway and then immediately take a left, that will wind you up in Cannon Falls.
Yeah,
and you're right
that
along
road,
that stretch
on
there.
That corridor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any damage over in that area?
Oh my gosh. I can't even, I just want to get down on my knees and thank God again, because the damage went straight from Northfield all the way through Denison, Randolph, Stanton. I mean, that's our area. And it literally went around our house and then carried on to Cannon Falls. So it's like we had some magical force shield over it. We didn't lose power. There wasn't even any rain. And it just went right around us. And
Were there sirens in the area?
Well, it was kind of interesting because we were all in Northfield. Brad and the kids and I, we were all at our Taekwondo class down on the little Highway 3, the church that has the Taekwondo class. And it was at the end of class and the sirens went off. And I thought, well, I can see that there's weather, but I don't know. I'm kind of in the generation where I don't take the sirens totally seriously because sometimes they go off and it's nothing. And so, to be honest, I had a pedicure appointment that I really, really wanted to go to. So Brad was taking the kids home, and I decided I was going to drop by my little LA Nails and get my pedicure. And my feet are soaking in the water, and there's other people in the place. And I'm looking at my weather app, and the weather app says a tornado is on the ground in Faribault, and it's at the airport, and it's heading towards Dundas, Northfield at 65 miles an hour, and it should arrive by 6:50 p.m. And I'm just still not taking this seriously. You can't pinpoint that. They're just saying stuff. And sure enough, at exactly 6:50 p.m., all the power goes out, the lights are out, and we're sitting in the dark, and I can see it's all glass window front. And it looks just like in a movie with the green sky, and you can barely see anything across the parking lot. It's just this murky. And I'm like, oh, wow, the weather app was correct. So I'm quickly refreshing, what does it say now? And meanwhile, I thought, I'm getting out of here. Like, some people were standing by the window and looking out, and I thought, well, if this is really a tornado, I'm not going to be in front of the blowing out glass. I'm going to the bathroom. So I took my stuff off to the bathroom to kind of hide out in there. And I'm calling the girls because now the weather app says, I'm like, well, they were right on the money. And they said there's one coming up through Kenyon. And they can't even get a handle on how many tornadoes there are. And so I called Brad, and they're driving that 246 towards Denison, and Daisy was the co-pilot on the phone. I said, "Where are you guys?" And she says, "We're just coming up this hill." I said, "Turn around right now. Turn around and go back to Northfield." And we have a friend that lives across the street from the middle school. I said, "Go to her house. I'm calling her, and you're running in their basement." So they did. They turned around, and it ended up that after the storm was over, where they were headed, where they were, is where some of the most damage was done, and that pizza farm was, you know, half a mile from them. Trees across, an 18-wheeler tipped over right where they were. So I feel so lucky that everybody was where they were, because if I was with them driving home, I wouldn't know all this. I wouldn't be able to access all of this, you know, weather apps and stuff like that. So it all worked out, and then they came back. But the whole ride back home again, when we all head back, Denison was just a mess, and trees all over the road. You had to drive around the back roads. You couldn't just drive through 9 because there was the roof flew off one of the buildings, and the power was out for days there. So we were all just nervous coming up again towards our house, like, what's it going to look like? How many trees down? Are the horses okay? And, you know. And just the little lights glowing in the house, like nothing ever happened. And my lab was sleeping up on my bed like she always does. Everybody's just fine. So I felt happy. How about you? You're in that more Dundas area. So did that?
Yeah, we had it come through. And I was, my story is that I had the television on, and it came across with that beep. And then she says, "This is a test for the next," you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of ignored it. But I did look outside of the patio in the bedroom, in the patio door, and it's kind of darkish green, and it was blowing, and I saw, you know, debris like leaves and branches kind of just swirling around on my deck. And I thought, huh. I says, that little bip, bip, bip was a real thing, and I'm going to get out of here. And I'm standing there looking into my backyard, and here comes a tree, falling down.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to get away from it, and there was a bed between the window and between the patio door, and then there was a bed, and I was between there. When I went to turn around and run, the bed was there.
You ran into the bed.
You know, so I ended up sitting on the bed as the tree was coming down.
Oh, how scary.
And when it came down, I go, well, it turns out, to give you an idea, when I opened the patio door afterwards, about 2 feet of the top, very tippy top of the tree, slid into the house. So
wow,
it hit the railing and on the deck.
But your house is okay.
Yeah, and I have an insurance guy that's kind of looked at it, because you never know about the roof and all that. But then our neighborhood just were real fortunate. There was no injuries. Number one, mm-hmm. Number two. We had a guy right on the corner of 124th Court and County Road 20, Cannon River Boulevard. His garage got totaled, and his back end of his house got some damage. One resident had a branch that went right through their house, and you could just see it was a tornado by the way things were twisted, etc.
Yeah.
And the tree. The young lady that works here, Pat, Joanne May, her lives across the street from me. And beautiful, old trees were all down. And for me, I had one, two, three, four, five big trees. And we're still cleaning up. Mm-hmm. It's still, and by the way, if you need firewood, folks, I'm serious, if you need firewood, there's stacks of it. Just go to 124th Court East off of County Road 20 and make the circle.
Yeah.
And
everybody's got it out at the
We had people coming through a couple of days afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And if you saw them, they'd say, "Is it okay to take this wood?"
Yeah.
And if you didn't see them, people were taking the wood.
Any,
but
yeah.
There's so much of
it,
we don't know what to do with it.
It's been interesting watching these piles accumulate out at the rodeo grounds.
Yeah.
And it's just this massive composting chainsawing, you know. And I thought, I wonder where all that goes. I mean, they'll mulch it up and, you know, use it and stuff.
Well, we had a lot of people that came out and helped. And they took down trees and cut them up that would cost money if you had to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they just did it for the wood.
And
we had the Rotarians and the Bethel Lutheran Church and Northfield Shares and probably others. So BA, Bethlehem Academy, all came up to our neighborhood and helped clean up. And it's still a mess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you want some free firewood, anybody, there it is.
What's that address again?
County Road 20 and 124th Court East.
All right. It's fireplace season, so.
It's one direction in and out.
Okay.
You just go in a circle. And there's packs, stacks of firewood.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Hey, sure. At 13 minutes after 10 o'clock, a reminder that my guest this morning is Dina Fessler. She's been a guest of mine on many occasions. And tonight's a special night. Terry and Jeff have been invited to the Northfield City Council, and the Northfield City Council is going to recognize KYMN Radio for its 50 years in the community, serving the community when there are tornadoes, etc. Except this one cut out the energy at the radio station tower site, transmitter site, and downtown for a while, but once it got back on downtown, we streamed for several days and then finally got the electricity out in Waterford.
Okay.
It is 10:14. Here's a message from one of your council persons.
This is Brad Ness, Northfield City Council member, encouraging you to vote on November 6th. The Northfield Ice Arena Advisory Board met for over a year and a half evaluating our ice arena and options on what to do about its current condition. Northfield and Dundas residents will vote on a 1/2 cent local option sales tax expected to generate over $7 million on a 20-year term. An additional $3 million or more is expected to be generated to support parks, trails, and recreational facilities in Northfield and Dundas. Visit the City of Northfield website at ci.northfield.mn.us for more information and vote on November 6th.
The exact time is 10:15:15. How about that? My guest this morning is Dina Fessler. Dina's been a guest of mine on more than one occasion. Always has something to say, and I sure do appreciate that. One of the things I was wondering in regards to where you live, that's a real nice ride for motorcyclists.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just beautiful. And it's horse country.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing I noticed about it when I left Cannon Falls the first time and went that way, not knowing where it was going to end up. I was taking a bike ride, and I noticed, holy cow, there's a lot of horse farms on that.
A dozen farms that have horses.
Yeah, what is that road called?
24.
Okay.
County 24.
Now, you have how many horses?
We have two.
And what are their names?
Murphy is my 28, gosh, he may be almost 29. He's my old guy. And we used to barrel race for years, and now he's retired. And then Millie is his new quarter horse companion, and she's only 4, so she's a handful. And I don't exactly know what I was thinking, getting a 4-year-old that I have to train, and I'm not getting any younger, and so.
So your horse was green at 4.
Well, I got her at 3, and you know she'd been ridden a little bit, but you know young horses, they just got all this.
I know.
You know, crazy energy, and so I spent the whole summer just kind of trying to socialize her, take her to you know horse shows and stuff, and. You know, she's all excited. And I mean, I probably won't be able to ride her at one for another year or so, but, you know.
What about the girls?
You know, they are not interested in horse.
They?
Not really ever. I mean, part of it is I don't think they've ever had a big interest like a lot of girls do.
Oh,
they
yeah.
have these, like, horse loves and stuff. Partly because they have chores. They have to clean the horse barns every day. That's their job. So they think of horses as just a pain.
Yeah.
And they don't see the magic of it all. And also, it was about 6 years ago, I had a pretty bad accident. And so they were young girls. And I remember the looks on their faces coming into the emergency room when I'm on the gurney with the neck brace on. And I think that sealed their fate that they're not interested in riding.
Well, tell me about that horse accident, because you have to get back on.
Wow.
So what happened?
You can if you live through it. That's the first requirement.
I rode horses for quite a few years.
Yeah.
So I'm not by any means a good horse guy, but
well, you robbed the bank, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was a thrill.
Yeah.
And it was a chance, and
that is something that's,
I got injured and all of that. But what happened to you?
What happened to me?
And
is,
were you riding Murphy?
Yep, Murphy. And I got Murphy when he was, I think he was 13. So I mean, he was really broke, and he'd done, you know, barrel racing and rodeo riding and roping for years. And I mean, he kind of trained me in a way because he really knew his stuff. He was always a little mischievous, but nothing that I couldn't handle because he just knew what he was there to do. And we were at Pine Island, and I'd been, this is many years into riding, so it's the same event, same show, same people, same everything, same drill. And Pine Island had a game show, and I was bringing him out, and it was the open riding during the break time, and we're just going to go stretch out. We haven't done anything yet. And we're about maybe 100 feet from the gate. And I just got on him, and I was going to ride into the arena and warm him up. And I got on him, and he just started kind of freaking out. I mean, like, sort of spook, but sometimes they spook and they you know, jag one way or another, or they, I don't know. But he just started, like, his whole body just started shifting. And so I only had one thought in my head, which is stay in the saddle, you know, get, you know, collect him up quick and stay centered, stay in the saddle. And he went over backwards.
Oh.
All, I mean, straight over backwards. And I remember everything. I remember the alley-oop going back, going, oh, my gosh, we're going back. Oh, my gosh, I mean, he's going to land on me. I remember the sound of my head hitting the ground. I caught his whole body and the saddle horn in my gut. And he rolled off to the side. And I remember laying there. I remember as I was falling, I'm like, I'm not going to be able to live through this. This is it. And just kind of that sad, like, oh, well, you know, I had a good time. It was all good. But goodbye, world. And then as I landed, the first thing I did is I was aware that I think I'm alive. But I tried to wiggle my toes because I'm like, my spine has to be crushed. And I felt my toes wiggle. I'm like, okay. And then I started to panic because I thought, well, he's around here somewhere and something's bothering him and he's going to jump on me or walk on me. And so I rolled over and I crouched. So I was able to move and I was kind of in this low crouching position and I'm just looking down and I can see all these people just coming in like, you know, oh my God, oh my God. And like, how many fingers am I holding? And they're, you know, doing all this cognition test. And I said, I have my phone in my pocket. I said, just call my husband and call an ambulance, and I'm not moving. I need to go to the hospital because I don't know what has happened, but something has to have happened. And so the next thing I know, an ambulance came, and when you're laying there, all I can see is whatever's straight up. So I can see some faces, and then they strap me, and the next thing I know, now I'm in the ambulance. And I thought that was kind of fun because I'm like, I've never been in an ambulance before. And so, and I'm just like, tie my horse up, tell my husband to come get him, you know, wherever I am. And I'm at Mayo now. And they parked my gurney, I guess that's what they're like, these little stretchers, in a hallway, getting me ready to go into the emergency room. This is the first thing that freaked me out, is because you know how they, in hospitals, they have these like domed mirrors on the ceiling, mm-hmm. so that you can see around corners when people are running. And they parked me kind of like right underneath this dome on the ceiling so I can see myself. So I'm kind of like, this is what it's like when you're dead and you leave your body and you're looking down on yourself. And I thought, oh, I look horrible. And I have like sticks in my hair. And I just look horrible. And I thought, this is kind of very humbling. That's all I could think of. And then anyway, they did tests all day. No internal injuries from the saddle horn, which is amazing. No concussion. I had fractured my pelvis, and so it was a break, but it didn't break apart, and it should have broken apart, really. I mean, to have 1,200 pounds just land on you. I thought, that is just crazy. And so I stayed a couple days at Mayo, which was sadly the closest thing to a vacation I'd had in a really long time, where I just laid there and didn't do anything but keep buzzing the nurse every time I wanted something. I'm like, I love this. I love it here. And so I just watched TV and took a lot of oxycodone and watched a little more TV. And anyway, but yeah, it was very, and I was on crutches for a while. And then after it settles in, the black eyes, and you know, when you have had a head injury like that, I'm like, oh, I just look like horror. But I feel, again, it's kind of like the tornado passing my house. I'm like, I don't know how I got so lucky, because, and this is the other thing, is the other people. The trauma didn't happen to me. It happened to everybody that saw that, because they, and people were calling, people I don't even know. And they're like, Dina, like, that was the most terrifying thing. And like, are you okay? Are you alive? What happened? And they can't, they'll never get it out of their head what they saw, you know. And
was it at the entry gate, or was it on, so in it was the arena?
No, actually, it was on the ground. If it was on the sand, that's a little bit better in the arena. But it was just on hard, not cement, but like, you know, just grass. And anyway, so here's why it's kind of relevant, is this summer I was at Rice County Fair, and they had an open show day, and something happened. I didn't see it, but the it was in the arena too, and somebody went over and whatever happened. And I'm watching what, now I can see what it looks like from the other standpoint, where there's, you know, a dozen people circled around and the ambulance coming out. And it just, it was very, it's very humbling, and you just think about how dangerous the sport is. But I'm very stubborn, Wayne, because even though, like, I counted down the days until the doctor said my pelvis fracture had healed, and I started walking him around that arena and like, don't you get out of shape, man, because we got ruins to win. And by the time I was able to ride him again, we did 7 more shows before the end of the season.
Well, how long between your next show and
well, it was June that it happened, and I had to wait 3 months. So I, like, by September, October, I like went to all the shows that I could. But it was very scary, and the PTSD is a real thing, man. I mean, it, you know, like the little things that take you back. And again, now if we're circling back to that woman's testimony, like, there isn't any logic, and you couldn't necessarily say all the little, like, certain details, but you, like, that hippocampus that she talked about, like, this sensation of, like, when even the smell of the arena, the squeak of the leather on his saddle, and I'm like, oh, God, we're all dying, we're all dying, we're all dying. And I would have to talk myself through this, because I'm like, I'm not giving up this sport. I love this. But it was very, very, and sometimes the judges would get real mad at me, because they're on a time schedule, and I'm like, I'm not riding him through the gate. I'm walking him. I'm going to mount him. It's going to take me a minute. Please bear with me. I have to get my confidence back. And I'm like, I had a traumatic injury, but I'm powering through this. I am not going to not do this. And so
on barrel racing.
Yeah, or, you know, and all the different games, like pole weaving and that whole thing. So it's all very...
Is Murphy a quarter horse?
Yeah, he's a quarter horse.
Okay. Well, what you're saying brings back memories for me. And the smell of a horse carrier or an arena, it's like... I like it. You know?
I do too. I love the whole vibe, the smell of hay, the all the sounds, just the energy percolating around the, you know, the people getting ready, and I love it.
Well, you describe things perfectly. I avoid the raid reenactments because I want to be in them, and that's not going to happen anymore. But when I first lost my leg, I did get on a horse, and I did ride during the rodeo about 4 years ago.
You mean when they circle through the arena with the guns?
Yeah. And, you know, okay, that was it. And now I'm okay. I don't have to get on a horse. And I've had 25-plus years experience. And you're being a victim of a broken pelvis. Mm-hmm. That's a common injury. Mm-hmm. Particularly, I hear it about women that have that happen. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what spooked Murphy.
I mean, sometimes, like, I've heard people, like, they'll buck, you know what I mean? And you just, like, jolt, and your body can't absorb that, and your pelvis is the first thing to crack. But, yeah, and I don't even know what it was. So it's not one of those things where you're like, well, here's what I won't do next time. And I would ask other people, like, what did you see? And they're like, we don't know. We just saw, you know, this horse just flip over on you, and like all they saw is like legs in the air. Like
I had a horse that pitched, so that prepared me for bucking. Mm-hmm. You know, it was good a little practice.
Yeah.
We raced at Canterbury Downs.
You raced a horse at Canterbury?
I forgot about that. You just reminded me. Chip and the gang went up there for I guess we'd put on a show.
So you weren't riding a thoroughbred in the race. You were doing the
no,
the
we brought our
Jesse
own
James
horses.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I had just a totally different vision there for a second of what you were
and
doing.
And I had this big stallion, and he pitched so bad. But anyhow, a couple of the guys, it was fun. I mean, to race at Canterbury Downs, shooting your gun,
yeah,
chasing each other,
yeah.
I forgot about that.
That's awesome.
That's got to be one of the things that can rip off a bucket list.
I was going to say, like, if that doesn't satisfy you as a life well led, then I don't know what does.
Well, I got a couple things, but I'm not going to talk about them right now. I'm going to take a break, and we're going to come back and continue our conversation, and that's just what we're doing, having a conversation this morning with Dina Fessler. I always want to pick up where we left off in the life of Dina Fessler, but somehow we always get off on a
it's
different
too complicated.
Track. And I don't know if you're still on sitting on a suitcase in China trying to get in the compound or if we're past that, but... We'll be right back and find out.
Hello, this is Josh Gare. My wife and I received bad news in 2006 when I was diagnosed with cancer. In addition to my growing health concerns, medical bills were piling up. I beat cancer, but I learned the struggles families face with the skyrocketing cost of health care. I'm running to be your state representative to be a voice at the Capitol who will fight for affordable health care. I will work across the aisle to lower costs and assure you are able to keep your doctor. November 6th, vote for me, Josh Gare, to be your next state representative.
Paid for by Friends of Josh Gare.
I'm Sam Richardson, principal of Greenvale Park Elementary. Every day I see the benefits of high-quality learning experiences in the important formative elementary school years. We can set students on course for future success in academics and life. The November 6th bond referendum will address our need for more space and an improved learning environment for all of our young students, pre-K through 5th grade. Please visit the district website at northfieldschools.org to learn more.
Prepared and paid for by Northfield Public Schools.
Millstream Commons Assisted Living is where the all-star seniors enjoy life in Northfield. From the delicious meals, the bright, spacious apartments, the volunteer projects, the bus trips we take, classes we attend, and the music we enjoy, there's something for everyone. At Millstream Commons, we treat everyone like an MVP. For more information, call 507-650-0141.
Hi, I'm Pam Fikencher, senior pastor at St. John's Lutheran Church in Northfield. We invite you to join us for beautiful, song-filled worship every Sunday at 8:30 and 10:45 a.m. We are located at 500 3rd Street West in Northfield. If you can't join us in person, you can listen to our broadcast at 8:30 a.m. every Sunday on KYMN Radio 1080 a.m. or live online at kymnradio.net. Go to stjohnsnorthfield.org to see our full calendar of events. We hope to see you soon.
Well, thank you, Reverend. And that's been a tradition for many, many, many years back when Pastor Wee was the main guy over at St. John's. One of the oldest churches in Northfield, and I guess there's about 20 different places or more to worship in Northfield. Can you imagine a town? You know, we have to count the students at St. Olaf and Carleton, so our sign out on this entry of 19 says 20,007.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take 5,000 students out, now we're 15,007, mm-hmm. and Red Wings, right about 15,000. I'm just talking.
Yeah, and, where are you going?
And I saw a minister, when I picked up your cinnamon rolls here, mm-hmm. come in, and ordered, I don't know what you ordered because I said next, and I left, but I said, good morning, Pastor. She said, good morning.
Was it Gail Marsh?
She was short.
The first one that comes to mind. Blonde?
Comparatively, no, she had long red hair.
Oh, okay, that's not Gail.
Or that pretty red, mm-hmm. not that all red hair isn't pretty, but you know, the maroon red type.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyhow, 1031 and 1080 Radio. Dina Fessler is my guest this morning. She has been on my show many, many times, and I find her very interesting and very knowledgeable. And I was going to say opinionated, but I don't mean it like opinionated. I mean that you're not afraid to express how you feel about different things. And do you think your daughters, let's see if I can remember, okay?
Go for it.
Okay. Sunny?
Yep.
Okay. Say the telephone number thing. You said that they have one telephone.
Oh, the DCS hotline.
Daisy?
Mm-hmm.
DCS. Daisy, Sunny, and...
C? Stands for...
Coco. And I'm sorry, I don't remember, but that's just what's happened.
Yeah.
There was a... on 60 Minutes, I think it was, last Sunday night, they interviewed Ted Turner. Ted
the
Turner.
The media mogul?
Yes.
Okay.
And he's turned 80.
Okay.
I'm 77.
Okay.
And he's suffering from a thing.
You're
that,
a media mogul, too.
Pardon me?
You are a media mogul, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got plenty of nothing. Who can ask for it? The point is that he is suffering from a similar disease as, that's very prominent right now and in the news, Alzheimer's.
Okay.
Okay. It's a similar to, but not as bad as he described it, but he has trouble getting a word out or he'll be talking.
Or a Parkinson's or a something?
No, no, it's a,
it's Alzheimer's?
It's a, well, it's... There's a name for it.
Okay.
And, but it's Alzheimer's, okay. But okay. Alzheimer's light, let's
okay.
say.
All right.
And he'll be talking, then he'll stop and, like, what was I talking about?
Uh-huh.
But, and he's 80.
Mm-hmm.
He owns hundreds of thousands of acres mm-hmm. in America. And he is the largest buffalo or bison herd owner.
Oh.
And like 14,000 of them or something like that.
He as gave like a away, sanctuary, or
yeah, on all of his ranches in Montana.
Okay, he's not a farmer like buffalo meat or.
Oh, he promotes it. Yeah, he has restaurants.
Oh, okay, that
and
too.
They
okay.
specialize
okay.
in buffalo meats.
Okay.
So he explained it. You know, if you can raise them, it costs money, and mm-hmm. if you can sell the meat, mm-hmm. you earn money to pay mm-hmm. for raising them.
Right. Yeah.
So anyhow, he had a very interesting life, obviously, and. And anyhow, he gave $1 billion as in boy mm-hmm. to United Nations to help countries that need it.
Okay.
And we all know that the current president believes that the United States has been doing 90% of the funding for the United Nations efforts
mm-hmm.
or whatever the
mm-hmm.
number is.
Yeah.
It's more than anybody else put together. So what do you think of that? Of him saying,
we
want to quit doing that.
Wait, I mean, well, you've kind of got two tracks here. One is, does the U.S. give too much money, like through the U.N. and our commitments? Or what do I think of a very wealthy guy
giving a billion,
tossing a billion into the hat to be spent? Like which, what is my opinion on?
What do you think he
Ted
should
Turner's
have,
decisions? Or?
Yeah, do you think he should have given it to the United Nations to help the world?
Oh, well.
Or would have been better off spending on all of the poverty things we got going here in the United States?
Okay. First of all, I think when you're that rich, you can kind of do whatever you want
obviously.
And whatever makes you happy. I think that I'm always pleased just to see, and I know that a lot of the donations they make is social capital for themselves, and so they're not always as just being generous, but there's an expectation of
who's
wealth.
They?
Of the, you know, like Zuckerberg is expected to be have a foundation that does something. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
And there's, I think it's Jeff Bezos is getting constantly criticized. He's the owner of Amazon for not doing enough, you know. And it's social capital in their circles because they can afford to have a cause.
Wouldn't that be fun to have that money?
It kind of would,
you
know.
I'd be up front saying, hey, guess what I'm going to do? I'm giving the Mayo $1 billion, and all he can do is study cancer in this one.
Yeah, I mean,
two
in
stories,
like, whatever your you know, pet project is, so to speak. I think... Here's what I think. I think especially because I've been in these asshole countries, as they're called. I've been, and I understand. I can understand why people feel like all we do is give and give and give, and nothing seems to get a whole lot better. Although that's not necessarily true, because if you look at the UNs, they have these Millennium Development Goals, and that they wanted to eradicate poverty and water, sanitation. And they have like this list of 15 things, and they've done a lot. I mean, it's very impressive that I think the average American is unaware of like how much global poverty has shifted, because they had a very concentrated plan that they put into action, and education for women and better medical facilities to, you know, all across the board. And so, I mean, I think that stuff does improve the world. America's, well, from my standpoint, from the places that I've been, I don't have a lot of time for whining Americans. And I know that a lot of them do live in poverty, and they live in their cars, and they're homeless, except for the fact that I see American, and I know this is talking as a white woman who was raised in Edina, so like I got all that. But our opportunities here, the fact that education is mandated, it's not a luxury. It's there for us. All of these opportunities are there. And are we on a level playing field? Certainly not. But I have a very hard time seeing any American who is not recognizing that we have the opportunities here to change our lives. We really, really do. And there are more resources out there than in any other countries. I don't spend a lot of time in other first world countries. Okay, that's my disclaimer. But in these underdeveloped countries, they really don't have infrastructure. And poverty really just means you watch your kids die and you love your kids. You know, just because you're poor doesn't mean that you don't have all of the same feelings. And watching, you know, especially in Afghanistan, watching girls grow up without education, and in India, and watching these girls get married off at young ages and watch their population grow and grow. And you can kind of, I think that nationalism and that whole, like, you know, we just got to take care of our own, you can look at it like that for a while, but it's just like the we're all part of a human body. That's my metaphor. And to say like, well, you know what, my hands are really the most important thing, so I'm going to take the best care of that, but letting other parts that you don't think are as significant, you know, suffer, at some point it's all going to catch up to you. At some point it will all catch up. So, you know, whether it's like watching the third world dump garbage in the ocean because they have no places to put it, and they have, you know, like there is no sanitation control. They're lucky if their drinking water is safe enough and they all don't die of those contaminants and stuff. And like the oceans don't care. They're the same oceans, and watching the polluters and the Chinese coal factories. I mean, that, not to just call out the Chinese. I mean, this treatment of the environment, it doesn't matter. Like, whatever they're going to do, if they're going to ruin the marine life and substantially, you know, decrease the amount of fish that we can catch to eat, or it's like neglecting your feet because you think your hands are more important. And somewhere along the line, you're going to realize you need your feet too. And things all get
Are you
together.
Using me as a metaphor?
No, I'm not. I mean, I could. I guess I could, but I don't. I wouldn't say that you necessarily neglected anything, or you know. But you could look at it that way.
I know what you mean.
Okay,
and you've been to China, so I've
been in a lot of these places,
yeah.
And so I've seen it. And okay, so now back to what is our responsibility to help others? That's another slice of the pie here, and I think that I really, especially from the work that I've been doing for the last 10 years. The way that we have been spending the money, I mean, it's unfair to say it's totally wasteful, but boy, I've seen so much inefficiency that it just makes me cringe. And it's like, well, no wonder everybody's so annoyed that we keep paying and nothing happens. And
do you think part of that is theft?
Oh, the graft, though. I mean, yeah. I mean, Afghanistan, it's just jaw-dropping. And I could tell the story again, and it just sounds like background noise to everybody. Yada, yada. I'll just get out of Afghanistan, blah, blah, blah. I mean, but the amount of greed on the part of the American contractors and the rest of the world, because all this money from America is pouring in. And anybody who wants to rebuild this broken down country, come on. And we've got contracts. They weren't vetted. The whole thing is just the biggest sham. I've seen carnivals run more organized, you know, where, like, they prevent their ride carriers from profiting off of, you know, I mean, like, I honestly, I mean that it's like a carnival is run better. And then when people criticize the Afghan government for being the most corrupt in the world, why wouldn't they be? I mean, like, why would, you know, it's sort of like this sort of Republican Democrat. Why wouldn't you play dirty? Everybody plays dirty. Like, you shouldn't even be here if you're not playing dirty. You won't survive if you don't play dirty. So there is the pot and the kettle. They're just sitting right there. Okay.
I remember reading a story about two ambitious young men that bought used trucks, had them shipped over to Afghanistan, sold them to the government, and then bought them back for less than what they sold them to the government, and sold it to the government again.
That's a perfect example. Yeah. And there would be no actual real paper trail of what has happened here. And, I mean, there has been, like, billions with B's spent on building huge electrical grids in sections of the country, and then they get abandoned sort of somewhere along the way, and there is no recounting for it. And I mean, and I've been there, and I see these people, and I know where they work in these, you know, to say silos, they're more ivory towers than anything else, because they are not connected to people. They're not allowed to be connected to the people. They're not allowed to know what's really even happening on the ground because of security. So you have, it's not even the blind leading this. The blind who aren't even there are leading this, and it's there's nothing but opportunity to milk off of this thing. And so it really hurts me. I do feel very, like, upset when I hear people say, like, oh, you just can't fix Afghanistan. Well, of course not. When you have every corrupt person on the planet, starting from ourselves, you know, judging the situation, and at the end of the day, these kids just want to go to school. That's all. And so I would do things very differently. And I'll tell you, here's a little story for you, because you're like, what does Dina do? One of the reasons that I kind of came in looking so bad is I was up very late last night. I was actually having a meeting with Afghanistan, with our director out there, but his 9 a.m. start time to be able to get online is 11:30 for me. So, and then my colleague Andy lives somewhere else. So we actually were sitting having a meeting right across the street outside the library in the car, and we do a WhatsApp, like a Skypey call, okay? And we have this project, okay? And the project is, there's this girl in the middle of not even Kabul, not a city girl. She's just this girl from this sort of remote province in the middle of Afghanistan, and her name is Razia, and she's this, like, cool little Dina, and she wants to start a volleyball team for girls because there's nothing for girls to do. There's not even roads in this town. There's not, you know, I mean, it's just, it's there's a ton of people there, but, like, there's no even infrastructure, and there's certainly nothing for girls to do. And they are lucky that they are allowed to go to school. So she's got an education, and she's, you know, she's a feisty little thing. And so I like her, and I've been talking to her for a while. And the thought of, like, building her volleyball team, is it going to solve Afghanistan? No, but it's got a lot of potential in it for changing the way these kids see themselves and turning them from this constant victim handout mentality to we can do things. And once, if you can just get a new tipping point going, you never know, right? So, and then of course we want, like, American girls to be part of this and not to, so, like, we're going to raise $10,000 to, like, for a whole year to build this thing up, and it would be a traveling team. So they would be traveling to other provinces and doing matches and whatever. It's not just a little sport.
What
court.
Would $10,000 in Afghanistan be like compared to here?
Well, it would be able to pay coaches and get them there.
Is it like 30,000?
No. I mean, like, you know, if they made $3,000, that would, you know, they're not doing well, but they're surviving.
No, what I mean is, I'm sorry, if you take $10,000 of American money to Afghanistan, to that little community, how far will that $10,000 go there compared to here?
Oh, it'll go very, very, very
far. That's
what
I was
thinking. Infinitely far. Okay. So we're, and this is a, I mean, my job is to sort of fix a reasonable budget that we could grow something, not just say, this is how the U.S. government rolls. Here's $5 million, kids, and here, Razia, take it. You're 16 years old, and there'll be some person out there that might manage it. Well, what's the first thing that's going to happen? 1,000 people are going to come converging on this, saying they all need to be put into the budget. And then before you know it, that $5 million or whatever dollars has been all carved up, because it's like if you went fishing and you threw bait in the water and everybody comes running because they're poor and they don't have opportunities. And they're like, you'd be stupid not to. And so anyway, so it's going to be like a tight budget where this is how much we're going to get done. And this is our first benchmark. But you're not going to get it all at once. You're going to get it quarterly. So I want to know, for $2,500, what are we going to do in 3 months? And you show me that this is working. And by the way, because you're only getting this much to do it, if you screw it up, I'm not trying to speak in a demeaning way, but like if it's mismanaged and, you know, the budget just got all like, oh, well, we have to add a whole bunch more stuff to it, we won't go to the next level. It's like, it's this or nothing. And because I have only invested a small amount, I don't mind pulling it out. I don't mind saying walking away. And then if there's 100 other kids that are like, wait, I want to start a team too. Can I get in? You know, no, it's like this girl and our director out there have to manage this. And then if they get to here and they get to here and they get to here. And the idea is to build it in a way with a long-term plan of, I know they're really poor, but in some way there's a social innovation underneath all of this, that how are you going to be able to carry it on yourself? And if we're not starting with that mentality, that we are looking for the way that at some point you're going to monetize something on your own. I don't even know. It could be anything. She could get ingenious and create her own video channel out of it and sell subscriptions to watch their match. You know what I mean? There's so many ways you could monetize a really cool idea, and that's what we're looking for from the beginning. And for this $10,000, instead of asking a donor for $10,000, we want 10,000 girls to donate a dollar to a GoFundMe. And how easy would that be? Because a dollar is, and what it does is it buys your way into this big Facebook group. So these girls are all like kind of joining this group together. And anyway, what I'm saying, and not that I know everything, but right there, that entire model that I just framed out to you has more chance of actually getting something off the ground, because people, if the kids on this end are not invested in it in any way at all, it's going to die on the vine somewhere. There has to be a change on both sides and some sort of an investment in here and some sort of big picture thinking for their generation, because that's the kind of stuff. Now, if the government said, Dina, you seem to actually have some good sense here, and how can we implement all of these things? You know, they need roads, they need schools, they need electrical grids. But like if everything was done in a way where you know, it had these like checks and balances, and it had this empowerment thing where these people aren't constantly looking at like, as soon as the money runs out, we're going to beg for some more. You know, like it has to. And you know what? This is kind of like a fact is, I'm kind of done working in Afghanistan with people that are older in my age, because they've just been in this mentality for so long of just donors, and I'm like, donors are sick of you. And I told this guy last night, I said to him, I was very honest, and he's a young guy, he's only 24, okay? He's the director, and the girl's 16. So now we're talking like this is a new way of thinking, and they are not contaminated by the donation mentality. And I said to him, I go, I'm going to be really honest with you. Americans are totally sick of Afghanistan. I don't know anybody that cares. Now that we have our own civil war brewing here politically, and I said, and I know your idea of a civil war is rockets blowing across streets, but this is a psychological civil war, and it is consuming all of the brain space of American people, and they are not interested. And so if we don't think of some way to make this a completely new paradigm of getting stuff done, it won't go anywhere, because you can say all you want about the people of Afghanistan are suffering, and it sounds like blah, blah, blah. And so anyway, we will see how it goes. And as you can tell, because my car meeting was just a few hours ago, it's getting off the ground. But like in a couple months or after the first quarter, I should come back and tell you what Razia's volleyball team is up to.
Okay, you're always welcome. And point number two, and that is, I wonder, have you written a lot of grants, or have you ever had to appear before a board of directors for a grant for one of the projects that you've started or been part of?
Yes, I have, and that's another rant I'll go on. I've written so many grants, and especially the government. I mean, I hate to be like, oh, the government's just so useful. It's so useless. I mean, it's just like a exercise in inefficiency. I've written so many grants for the government that's sending out the RFP, request for proposal. They want exactly what I'm doing, and so I'll spend, you know, if you've ever written a grant, it can be 20 hours or 40 hours or 100 hours and never get anything and barely even a acknowledgement. I'm like, well, what are you doing with the money? And that, but you know who gave me grants? There's only one group.
Nonprofit group? I mean, a benefactor group or
yes,
a government group?
A benefactor group.
Was it the Knight Foundation?
Nope.
It was at the Medtronic Foundation?
Nope.
Was it the, what was it?
They're a group of nuns, and they are the get stuff done people of all time. If you want people to help you get stuff done, you talk to the nuns.
Well, Mayo Clinic's got a show going on air right now.
Well, the nuns invented Mayo Clinic. There's this little group. They're called the Sisters of something or other. I can't even remember. I have to go back and look at it. And they were the only organization that saw this, and they funded it, and we got a lot of stuff done. You know, we really, really did. And but then I switched from a nonprofit to a for-profit, because for that very reason, it's like I'm done with begging for money. We're either innovative or nothing. And so, I'm all about the nuns, and you never really see any scandals with nuns, do you?
I haven't. I had nuns teach me.
Mm-hmm. They can be pretty tough. Yeah, well, okay. They got a reputation for that.
And I got a story, and everybody that has gone there, they all have a story. But in reality, the bottom line is ultimately the nuns were good teachers and good people.
I just love nuns. That's my calling that I missed.
You know why?
I should have been a nun.
You know why you always see two nuns together instead of one?
Is there a pun in here?
I'm not going to tell you. Until in another 5 minutes, I'll
tell
you.
I'm going to think of it.
I'll
Force of habit?
that was cute. That was very good.
I just feel like there's got to be a great punchline.
That is a good punchline. That is a very good line. That's funny. It's funnier than what I'm going to tell you off the air.
Okay.
Anyhow, one of the things that we have never gotten done is how you got to Northfield, Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
from where,
mm-hmm.
I don't know,
mm-hmm.
and what the, you know.
That's a great story.
Well, we have never gotten there.
It's gonna take
you
time.
We always go off on a tangent.
I know.
But I got to get you out of China, I think. Well, I think I might have gotten you.
I think we got out of China. We went back to New York and the runway shows that I did and the business that I started. But I don't remember the story of coming to. And, you know, it's a great story because it all has to do with the tavern.
Oh, I got to remember.
The tavern restaurant.
Yeah, I remember. Mm-hmm. What's her name? Mm-hmm. Being on her hands and knees laying the bricks that go lead into the tavern entrance.
Really?
The bricks there? Yeah.
Hand-laid by some woman?
Yeah, and she's very popular here in Northfield. One of those moments. And Tom, I think, was the guy that owned the place originally.
Mm-hmm.
And that they were kind of like an item, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, I think her name was Mary something. But I see her around occasionally, but I'll never forget her being on her hands and knees putting those bricks in.
I've been on my hands and knees laying bricks in our patio, and
that's got to be hard work.
It's very, yeah. It's You need a lot of ibuprofen to get past that.
Okay. So the girls are all doing well. Mm-hmm. They're being homeschooled over the internet.
They're not homeschooled. Well, Minnesota Connections Academy.
Okay.
Hello out there, Minnesota Connections. Because they're a school. They're a charter school. It would be like if they went to Arcadia, but I kept saying they're homeschooled.
Yeah.
No, they're not. They go to this school.
That brings me to this. Do you want them to eventually have the social experience of joining their peers in high school?
I don't know. I mean, first of all, they do have social experience. It's just not what we had. And they're in the Taekwondo class, and they're in the Cannon Valley Youth Orchestra, and they are every Monday they're in a theater class over it. They go to this thing, and a lot of homeschool kids do this, and so they're with a couple dozen kids every Monday learning their theater improv, and you know, so they have. And then Coco's in Model UN, so she goes to these delegation meetings, and then they all go off to the hotel and debate bills and whatever they do. And you know, Sunny's in space camp, and I mean, they have a lot of, you know, very interesting interactions with kids, but in a way that I really like it, because they're all there kind of focused on things that they like to do, as opposed to the I don't know. I mean, like, just this being in a building full of kids all day doesn't necessarily socialize you. It can anti-socialize you. My kids know how to talk to people better than other kids that I know that only know how to type with their thumbs, because that's how they communicate. So, you know what I mean? You have to kind of define what is socialized. And I do stand, I'm kind of coming back to where I launched from 2 hours ago, which is, it is an epidemic. The number of kids with, like, full-on depression is, I think it's at epidemic stages from not only the research that I've done, but from what I've seen. And I work with kids, and I am just continually astounded by how much depression they have. They really are very unhappy.
Is that because of the bullying on social media?
It's just everything. They are in this vortex that they can't seem to get out of, where they are under scrutiny 24 hours a day. It's not even the bullying. It's just like being connected to, like, remember when we went to school, and whether it was good or bad or bullying or this or that or just stuff, just the friction of the day. Because, you know, you come home and you do your paper out or whatever, and you unwind and you do some homework and you eat dinner and you sleep, and then it starts all over again in the morning. It never ends for these kids. It never ends. They're online all night. The kids sleep with their phones in their bed, and they never get off. And the kids will even say, if you don't stay in it, you're going to be out. You know what I mean? Like, they are constantly jockeying for their position socially. They are constantly being comparing the social media. It's like they're so hyper-stimulated. Like, what do you think happens to people that never have a chance to exhale? Wayne, it is 11 o'clock. It's time to wrap up.
I got to tell you, we started off with the Kavanaugh hearing, right? And what he did in 1982 as a teenager. Now, the people of the generation that's going through high school right now and the previous three or four classes, everything they've done is...
I hate to see who's being interviewed for the Supreme Court in 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's all there. You can go find out when you said, hey, nice time at the party last night or something.
But you want to know what? This is something that we'll have to continue in our next segment. But what these kids have in their social media, they actually have... alter ego social media, okay? So one kid can have two or three accounts. There's the account that my parents and my future employers will see, and then this is the one where, okay, you know, so they've already got all these imposter syndromes. And if you don't think that's enough to make a young person get a little, you know, destabilized emotionally, that's where I don't know what my kids are going to... I don't know what I want them to go back into just yet.
TBC.
TBC. To be continued next time. This is the Wayne Eddy Show.
Hey.
Wayne Eddy Fair.
Yeah. Hey, thank you very
much
for coming in.
I'm helping you wrap up. Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for the cinnamon rolls.
You betcha. tomorrow's guest will be Randy Brewer, former Minnesota Gopher basketball team, and he'll be in the studio, and we'll chit-chat with him. If you are a big fan of his, come on down, look in the window, get an autograph, whatever. Very nice man. We'll enjoy his interview tomorrow on KYMN 1080 AM Radio, Northfield, Minnesota, and
95.1, The One, revolutionizes radio with a playlist that lasts for days, not minutes.
Thinking about you, baby.